Morgan?
I can hear you.
Oh, all right. I guess we're going to go live with this then.
Okay,
thanks.
Perfect. Yep.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
All right, we're going to try this again. We had to switch to our other phone system. I don't know if I should call it our backup phone system or not, because we have two, and it's shocking to me how often they stop working. Now, there was a time where many of the technical issues were on our end, but that has not been the case lately. We have upgraded all of our equipment right down to ordering specialized cables to make sure that the cable isn't an issue. And this has not been our technical problem the last couple of times. So fortunately, when one phone system seems to be giving us fits or is just completely down, we could not get a single call through other than mine on the other phone system. But this one seems to be working. So let me check to see if we are going to get the app. Okay, the phone number has been updated in the app. You do need to restart it. So if you restart the app and you hit the call now button, you will be in here live with us. Or I can give you a new number to join. You can dial, here's the number, grab something to write with, 319-527-6791. So either restart your app and hit the call now button, dial 319-527-6791. We had plenty of calls trying to come in, so we will we'll see if we can get them in here and get this working. Looks like it's all working just fine. All we need now are some calls, so jump in and join us. Once again, either restart your app and then hit the call now button. That should get you in on the correct number, or dial 319-527-6791. I also see we are back live on the chat. It looks like the live stream video is working fine. You know what's interesting? There are several new programs you can live stream on video to multiple sites. I believe we are live streaming to 7 sites right now. And those systems seem to work really well. The two phone systems that we use do not seem to be working well, and they haven't for over a year now. We've been fighting back and forth. The good news is, our system on the app is built these live streaming systems. So I believe once we get our app finished soon, I hope, we will be able to avoid these issues. That's what I'm hoping anyway. So it looks like the live stream's working. The app is working. We are just waiting for a call. Looks like we've got a couple coming in, so we should know here in a second. It looks like the screener is able to talk, and the calls are coming in heavy. So the app must be working. Hopefully we'll have good audio between myself and the callers, and we will get on with the show today. So back to my point about there are a lot of similarities with our economy between now and the 70s, kind of stagflation, an economy that's slowing down. We keep hearing about companies going out of business and laying off. And that's not just trucking, it's across the economy. And yet prices keep going up. We just did a, I say we, but Lisa did most of the work. I helped a little. We just did an event here in town for the PTO, which is the organization, Parent Teachers Organization. It was a casino night, so they bring in a company that can set up like a temporary casino here in town. And Lisa and I catered it. And we do one or two events like that a year. I was absolutely shocked at the cost. A lot of, you know, this is an event where we buy a lot of food that we normally wouldn't buy. We don't eat. That's just how these events go. But I was just absolutely blown away at how expensive it was. So inflation is still continuing to go up. And here's the thing that you might be confused about. The government keeps trying to report that inflation went down. It did not go down. It has never gone down in a long, long time. What happens is maybe this month it didn't increase as much as it did last month. So they report, and they're careful about it, they'll say the rate of inflation has gone down. Well, technically, that's a true statement, but it's very, very confusing. Inflation goes up every month. It continues to go up every month. That means you have to add whatever inflation was this month, the last month, and the month before, and things are getting really expensive. Now, here's the big difference that I'm seeing. I talked about how hard it was to get a job then. Nothing like that happens anymore. And we didn't have the options like Uber and Lyft and Instacart and DoorDash and Uber Eats. So if you do lose your job, you can be earning money that afternoon. We didn't have those kinds of opportunities. What I see now is the economy looks the same in a lot of ways. We have rising prices and a slowing economy, stagflation, except this time, it's the opposite. So back then, I was a teenager trying to get jobs. Now I'm an employer trying to find employees, and you can't. That is really odd, and that's different. It's very different from what we went through in the 70s and 80s. It's the opposite. So if so many people are getting laid off, where are they? It's not enough to fill the jobs that still need to be filled, but the jobs that need to be filled don't seem to pay a whole lot. So we'll keep an eye on that. All right. We've got some calls screened. We're going to go check them out. We're going to start off in Oklahoma. Paul, good morning.
Howdy. Let me get back in the truck.
Well, look at that. Our backup phone system is working. I don't even know which one I should call the backup anymore. We have to switch back and forth so many times.
Yeah, the 50-50 choice.
Yep. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. So,
hey, I have a theory. Maybe both of these companies are struggling because they can't find employees.
Could be. People don't show up to work quite often. Yeah.
That seems to be an issue.
Yeah, because I went into a Petro restaurant one day in West Memphis, Arkansas, Saturday night. I get there, and it's like the gates halfway pulled across, and I said, are you closing early? She said, no, I can only do takeout orders because I'm the only one that came to work. One waitress showed up on a Saturday.
I hear more and more of these stories, and it is so shocking to me. This is so different. When we went through this in the 70s, we were begging for work. I mean, you would do almost anything for a job, and they were hard to find. Now, people just decide not to show up. And you know, it doesn't matter, because if they get fired, they can get another job tomorrow.
Yeah, but will they show up if they get another
Probably
job?
Not.
That happens too. So,
Probably not. And now I saw this headline. I didn't really read the story. But the government is going after some company because they did background checks. One of the convenience stores, maybe it was Sheetz or one of those. They're saying it was discriminatory because they do background checks on their employees.
Nothing wrong with that, if you ask me.
How do you not do that? Because if we hire an employee that turns out to be a pedophile or a criminal of any kind, We are now responsible for their behavior. What do you mean? And it's my business. Of course I'm going to do a background check before I hire somebody. Yeah. How could that be discriminatory? The only people it's discriminatory to are people who have bad things in their background, and that's the whole point.
Yeah. Yep. So on Saturday, I loaded at the Chattanooga Volkswagen plant, and when I come down the road, and the UAW's been trying to get in there, well, they were successful this time, but out the front, they got a sign, back Biden, back the UAW, and I thought, I should run that damn sign over. And then Harold calls me yesterday, and he says, because I told him about it, there's two signs, one when you go in and one when you come out. And it's like, and I never thought people in Chattanooga would be that way politically inclined. But the UAW got in there, 73 to 27% was the vote.
Whoa, that's not even close.
Yeah, because it's the third time they tried, but this time they made it. Yeah. So I was shocked, because that part of the country, I thought, ain't no way. Yeah.
Well, that was the whole point of the migration of all the auto companies from the north and northeast into the south, because they got away from the unions. I guess that's not going to last, though.
And the next on their list is the Mercedes plant in Vance, Alabama, apparently. So I see the signs up over that way. So,
I have to at least be consistent here. I have said that I have no problems with unions existing. If somebody wants to join a union, they should be allowed to. And I guess this is our process. If you by vote, the workers want to bring in a union, then I guess they will.
Yeah. So, but I'm of the opinion, this is the way I see it. Like if I'm Volkswagen Corporate or Mercedes or whatever, and we're a non-union outfit, and they say, well, we want to become union. Okay, well, if you become union, you won't have a job here, because we're not going to be union, and this is our company, not yours, so the tail's not going to wag the dog. So you can either have your job, and we'll pay you this much, and we'll look after you, pay you benefits or whatever, or we'll get someone else to come and work here, or we'll ship the plant to Mexico, because there's already a Mercedes plant in Mexico, so they better watch what they care for, what they because sometimes it can backfire.
That's the other half of this. I am all for freedom of choice. If you want to vote in a union, you can. I'm also for the owners of that factory saying, we don't want to deal with unions. We're going to go somewhere else. They should have that same right. And, you know, let's put these two stories together. So we're in an economy where I've never seen people who are so lackadaisical about work. If I show up, I show up. If I lose my job, so what? I'll go get another one. I mean, that seems to be a common, it's hard to find people to work. Now, if you've ever been around a union operation, I'm not saying that union employees don't show up to work, but when they don't show up to work, it's even harder to fire them. When they show up and don't do much of anything, it's next to impossible to fire them. So
I was here, looked, I clocked in at 4 a.m.
I'm here. That's all that seems to matter. I have firsthand experience with this, and I've told this story before. Just about everybody in my family was involved with the Teamsters when I was growing up, just about everybody. And I had a brother-in-law who had a less than stellar work record, and he did switching out in the yard for one of the big LTL carriers, Spectre. At the time, they were the fifth largest trucking company in the U.S. He got caught sleeping twice out in the yard. He would just park the switcher somewhere where they couldn't see it, and he would just take a nap. He'd go to sleep. And who knows how many times or how long he was doing this for, but he got caught twice, and the union kept his job for him. It's awful.
But it's the new world we live in. It's like, I don't have to work. I just got to be here. I just got to clock in and stay here all day and clock out.
Or,
and I get paid.
Or,
so,
or like the restaurant.
Have someone
you just
clock
got
in for me.
Just don't show up.
Yeah. So
I hear lots of stories from employers of how difficult, you know, like I say, it was the opposite. when I was, when we went through this in the 70s, as an employee, you were begging for a job. You were doing whatever you had to do to find a job. Now it seems like as an employer, you have to do that to find employees. And I hear from employers all the time where they will finally get people in to fill out applications. They choose somebody and then people just don't show up, like ever.
Yeah.
Like they filled out an application. You called, you tell them they have the job. You go through all that. And then on the first day, they just don't show up.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you not coming? No, I changed my mind.
Yeah. I changed my mind.
Yeah. Something else better came along. It's closer to my house that I don't have to show up for.
Oh, man. I don't know where we're going with this one, but it doesn't look good right now.
It's a free country, though, so feel if you want to be a union member, go be a union member. If you want to drive a W900 Kenworth, drive a W900 Kenworth. If you want to drive a Volvo, drive a Volvo. Free country, last time I checked, but they're trying to erode those freedoms slowly.
Yeah, and just realize that if you push the union thing, the automakers have been known to do whatever they have to do to avoid unions.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of vehicles that get made in China or Mexico. There's probably a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, our workforce is not what it used to be.
Right, I got to go and deliver some non-union made Volkswagens, but in a couple of weeks they'll be union employed. So the quality might go down, I don't know.
Well, we've seen that happen. We'll keep an eye on it. All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to Texas this time. Shane, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing good. We looking at an oil sample today?
Yes, sir.
All right, are you running catalyst?
I am.
And is this a new truck or a new engine?
It's a new truck and new engine. So.
All right. New truck, new engine, 80,000 miles total on the truck and 50 on this oil?
Correct.
And are you using catalyst?
Yes.
Okay. So the catalyst probably accounts for the iron. So I'm not too worried about that, but I'm also seeing almost all of your wear metals went up. Chromium went up, nickel went up, aluminum went up, copper went up, lead went up, tin went up. And we were at 10 on silicon, now we're at 15. So I'm a little concerned that we're getting dirt in this engine somewhere.
Right, and that was what Eric had said last week. I'd also sent it to him at Pittsburgh Power. So yesterday, I'm in the middle of painting and re-oiling the air filters. I did go through and verify the connections on all the intake. There were some that were questionably loose. I did tighten those up. That may be where the silicon's coming from. It hasn't been opened, so.
Right. And, you know, sometimes on a new build, we see some higher silicon numbers, but we would expect it to go down, not up. And it's going up. And it started right at the danger zone. 10 is kind of our cutoff. Now you're at 15, and we're seeing wear metals. Now, wear metals sometimes on a new build have more. So this is a little bit of a confusing report to try to read. But I would change the oil. I mean, just because of the dirt. There's nothing else wrong with this oil, but we need to get it kind of a fresh start on this and see. You've re-oiled the filters. You've checked all the connections. Let's change the oil and get a fresh start on this and see what happens.
Okay. All right. That's where I was concerned with. And after Eric brought it to my attention also, it was kind of, all right, well, I was definitely thinking that from what I read, but a second opinion or third opinion definitely doesn't hurt.
And this is why we sample every 25,000 miles, even on trucks that allow 75,000-mile intervals. I wonder when the OEMs might address this. We use bypass filtration, and we recommend oil sampling every 25,000 miles. Well, that is longer than oil changes used to be. So when we came up with the bypass filter and the sampling and changing the filter at 25,000, many trucks on the road back then, they would have been changing their oil at 15,000. Well, if you change your oil every 15,000, you're not in a big danger of a problem like fuel dilution or soot or silicon, unless you just keeps happening over and over and over, but at least you're putting fresh oil in every 15,000. I love the fact that these trucks will go 75,000 without an oil change, but if you have a problem, especially if that problem occurs early in that 75,000-mile change, and you're getting fuel dilution or a lot of dirt, we could wipe out an engine before we get to 75,000, and even then, we're still not checking for the problem. All we're doing is changing the oil.
Right. So Eric had also mentioned the potassium being high, which could be from coolant intrusion.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, your sodium is totally low, and your potassium, until we get above 100 on both of those numbers, I don't get too worried. Even if you had potassium and sodium, let's say in that same range, 40, well, there's nothing to do at that point except wait. If you had both sodium and potassium, I would say it's going to be a coolant intrusion. But with only one and this low, more than likely you picked up some chemicals off the road somewhere.
Okay. I haven't been anywhere, Texas to Florida. That's my run. So, I mean, it hasn't been in a lot of rain.
It's surprising where we can pick these up sometimes. Now, it could be the very beginning of a really, really small coolant leak right now, one that's so small we would never find it. What you want to watch for, really, is if you ever have to add coolant. If your coolant level drops. Oh, well, then that's, I guess I should have asked that first. Okay. How much have you had to add?
Since the truck was new, since we picked it up with 11 miles on it, I've had to add 2 gallons of coolant. Some of that was going through an APU leak on the connection between the truck and the APU, but that's been fixed and taken care of, and I'm still having to add a little bit of coolant, depending on how hard or how heavy I'm going.
Here's what I would start doing. And right now, there is no problem with this coolant. If it's coolant, there's not enough in there to hurt anything at all. So we have time on this, and it's a good thing because there's no way we're going to find this yet. Here's what I would do, though. I would start tracking your coolant the way you track oil. So when you have to put coolant in, write down the odometer, write down how much coolant you put in. And so measure it. Like, we want to know you had to put in a quart. And what we're going to be watching for is, does it get worse? That's why we want a really accurate, not like, well, I had to put a little coolant in last week and I'll probably put a little in this morning. We want accurate numbers, and then we can look at it and say, it was using this much coolant this many miles. Now it's using more. It's getting worse. Nothing to worry about. It's not going to hurt anything right now, but we may be seeing the very beginning of some sort of coolant leak.
Right, and that's what Rush had said. They've looked at it 3 times, and they're like, we don't see where it's going. So you're just going to have to wait until the snake really rears its head up, because there's no way for us to find it right now.
It's not even evident yet that there is coolant getting into the engine. There might be.
Okay.
And then we know you are adding some coolant, so then we start to wonder. And it's been doing it since it was new, so let's just keep an eye on it. But I would start measuring that coolant pretty accurately.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I appreciate the help and the information, and I will get that changed within a week.
All right. Let me know how that goes. We'll keep an eye on it with you. Let's go to Ohio. Brian, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kevin. It's time
What's
for
your
favorite
today?
Question in the whole wide world.
Okay.
Why?
Go ahead. Why?
The question is why. Yes.
All right.
Now, what I want to know the why to is I've heard you state this a bunch of different times over the years. People have asked you when they should start taking Social Security. You said, tell me when you're going to die.
Right.
Why?
Because it's really just math. So if you start collecting Social Security as early as possible, like the first year they tell you you can, you get locked in at a lower rate per month. If you wait, then your rate per month goes up. If the longer you wait
Correct.
To collect, the bigger your check is every month, but you've
Right.
also skipped those years that you could have been collecting. So now it becomes a math problem. Will we live long enough to collect more if we wait, or if we know we're going to die early, we should start collecting it as soon as possible because ultimately we would get more by starting earlier. But we can't make the calculation unless we know what day you're going to die.
Okay, well, let's just plug in some numbers. Let's say you're going to live to be 75, and the other thing, you're going to live to be 80. I'm just going with statistical averages on my family.
Okay.
Okay,
I can't calculate this in my head. There's
okay.
so many factors I'd have to know. I'd have to see your Social Security history and know
okay.
how much you would collect at seven. Well, when are you considering starting collecting?
I'm looking at, 62, and I'm also looking at 65.
So have you gone to the Social Security Administration and requested your reports?
No, I have not, because I'm not even 60 yet.
Well, that is the step that we would start to do. So
okay.
not only do we need to know what day you're going to die to do this accurately, but we also need to know when what are the options on start dates. If you're looking at 62, we have to go to Social Security and say, okay, how much will I collect if I start at 62, or how much will I collect if I start at 65? So that's the first bit of information we need. Then we could make some predictions. Then we could say, okay, if you live to 75, you should start taking it early. But if you're going to live to 80, well, then you should wait. But there's a lot of numbers we need to know.
There's going
to
be that much of a difference?
Well,
so there will be that much of a difference in the math?
Well, there could very well be, or otherwise, why would I even
okay.
talk about this? I mean, if there's
well, no,
if there
that's
was
what I'm
no
trying to find
to,
out. I mean,
well,
so
again,
you've never expanded on it. You've always just said, tell me when you're going to die, then I'll tell you when you should take it. I'm not saying you haven't. I'm just saying I've never heard you expound on it.
Okay, so and let's go through it again. If you
okay.
and I'm just going to use very hypothetical numbers. If
okay.
you start at 62, you're going to get $1,000 a month. If you wait till 65, you're going to get $1,500 a month. So now we could at least go through. Let me see if I can do this. Should be fairly easy math in my head. That would be 3 years, 36 months, times $500 extra a month. So that's $18,000. And we're getting
okay.
$12,000 a year on the lower amount. So can you start to see now we're 18,000 ahead by taking it later. So, and we know that we get an extra $500 a month. So you see where the extra $500 a month within a little over 3 years overcomes the difference. Now you're collecting more because you waited. But if you die early, if you die before you even get through that three-year period, then you would have been better off taking it early because you didn't live long enough to get the additional money.
Yeah. Now, that part I knew. But I was just trying to understand where you were coming up with the other part of it.
What other part? This is the whole part. It's do you take it early or do you take it late? And we can't know unless you can tell me when you're going to die. I don't know what other part there is.
Well, no, I mean, like, you know, the difference between 62 and 65, if you know you're going to kick off somewhere in that time frame, yeah, take it at 62 with the
no rate. No, stop. You're not getting it. I'm not saying you would take it if you knew you were going to die before you're 65. That's not what I said, and that's not how the calculation works. Clearly, if you know you're going to die before 65, you're going to take it early. I'm talking about calculate out to 75 or 80. It depends, and that's why I had to use hypothetical numbers because you don't know yours. If you knew yours, we could calculate based on a range of when you might die. So even if we don't know for sure, we can still take your numbers and say, well, if you live to 75 and die at you know, 75 and 10 days or whatever, you would have been better off taking it early. But if you make it to 76, there's going to be a year where it flips. We don't know what that year is until we know all the numbers. But if we had your numbers, we could calculate and say, okay, based on your two numbers, you need to live another 12 years after you start collecting in order to make it worth it to wait.
Okay. At least I've got a basis for the math formula now, so if I get my numbers, it'll help me to understand it better.
Yeah, so there is a process. You can reach out to the Social Security Department now, and they will give you all of your amounts and what you're going to get if you wait till whatever age.
Right, but that still doesn't tell you when you start taking it, though. That just tells you what your start point is, correct?
Yes. And that was my point. Nobody can tell you for sure unless you can tell me what day you're going to die. That's the whole point.
Right.
We have to speculate on part of this. We don't know when we're going to die.
Yeah.
But if we get the hard numbers, we can at least tell you, okay, if you think you're going to live 13 years after you retire, then wait. If you're only going to live 12, then take it early. We could at least set a range at that point.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That's more, it makes sense. I mean, it's just more than I've heard you explain before on this situation.
Right.
That's all.
And part of that is because nobody knows when they're going to die. But we can calculate out what the odds are.
Exactly. Well, I mean, cause, you know, I look at the rest of my family, how long they survive, so.
Well, and then we always have to remember you could be run over by a bus.
And I'm married, so I could unknowingly die in my sleep.
That's always a possibility as well.
So, all right, Kevin, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Iowa. Brandy, welcome.
I don't hear the beep. Guess I'm on.
You are on.
Good. I sent you from my email. It was the new terms for Google service. I saw this a few weeks ago in RVTravel.com, like a newsletter, and they were alerting people about these new reviews, but I didn't really think it applied to me. Well, when it came to my email, I was kind of thinking, and it's like a contract. It's got new terms of things, and I sent it to you to see if anything I should be concerned or worried about. And I said to Morgan, it's like, well, is it possible then, if you don't play their game, you don't have to use it. And they kind of suggest that. So they use Google Play, and your app's on Google Play. And say, well, if you don't like our service, well, you don't get our, you can't get your app. And that's kind of why I'm bringing it to your attention.
Maybe I missed something. Try again.
About what part?
Just start over. I'm not sure. I must have missed something in the very beginning. I was trying to adjust my audio because for some reason the other day my audio was too quiet and the callers were too loud. Now I have the opposite. So I was trying to fix that. I think I must have missed something because I'm not even understanding what the question is.
Well, it's an alert, so to speak, but it asked, the question was, I sent this to your letstruck.com to look it over. It's like new terms of service for using Google. And
what
I said
Google, maybe that's what I missed. Google has got about 187 different services, and it's really confusing. But what part of Google are we talking about here? What service?
Well, that's kind of why I was hoping you had seen it, because it's extensive to the person that uses Google. I mean, I'm just an everyday person. It's like, that doesn't matter to me, but should it?
Well, I don't know, because again, Google has a lot of different services, and they have what's called a TOS, T-O-S, Terms of Service, for every single one of their services. It's a different agreement and a different TOS. Now, I have to say, as much as I talk about you should read all the contracts that you sign or that you're under, we don't really sign these contracts, but in many cases we agree to the terms of service as we're signing up for something. But I have to be honest, I've never read a single one of these, and I've probably signed up for 10,000 of them in my time. I've never read one. I don't want to read one.
Well, I didn't
Maybe
either.
Sure. But here's kind of my logic on this. I kind of approach this the same way I approach all the stupid extended warranties everybody wants me to pay for. If I look back over the time that I've been buying stuff that they put warranties on, not once would any of these warranties ever have paid off for me. This is nothing but a giant money-making thing. I could also look at all these terms of service I should have been reading before I agreed to them, and had I read them all, I can't imagine how much time I would have invested, and honestly, it wouldn't have mattered. I still would have signed up for the service. At the time, I needed the service for something. So I don't know that anybody ever even reads these things.
Right. Well, I just kind of thought, it kind of suggests that if you don't like the way we do things, you can go somewhere else. And as I was saying to Morgan, it's like, wasn't that like if you go to Google Play and you want your app? Well, you can't get your app if you don't basically agree to the terms of service for Google. And as I said at the beginning, I came alert to this by RVTravel.com.
Let me go back again, because you keep saying if you sign up for Google. You can't really sign up for Google. Google has probably more than 100 different services. So what you are agreeing to at that point, not Google as an entire company, you are agreeing to the TOS, the Terms of Service, for the App Store itself. That's
okay.
It. You didn't agree to the terms of Google Mail. You didn't agree to the terms of Google Voice or of dozens and dozens of other Google services. You agreed to the Terms of Service for the App Store. Specifically.
Okay. Looking for peace. That's the first time I've ever seen this on my phone.
Yeah, well, here's my point. Go read the terms of service and call me back in about 6 hours.
I was hoping you would have. It's slow.
No, that's my
point. It's confusing.
even though I know that there are things in there that I should probably know, I don't read these things. There's too many of them. Like I say, as a company, we probably have at least 30 to 40 of these services that we run our company on. And they change constantly. I might add a new one today. Who knows? And I just right. do not read these things.
It just kind of sounded threat. I kind of glanced it, when I came across it, I didn't think anything of it. But then it shows up on my email, and it basically say, you will do things our way, or you won't. You can go somewhere else. And geez.
But let's bring that back to just the real world. Every store I've ever walked into since I was a kid had a sign on the door that said no shirt, no shoes, no service. That's the same thing. You will follow our rules while you are interacting with our business, or you won't interact with our business. I mean, that's nothing new. It's just in the digital world, there are so many services and things are more complicated. Who owns the data that you create on any social media platform? Do you own that or do they own it?
Yeah, that's exactly what was in there. I do remember that part, yeah.
No, so they cover all those things. They cover the fact that they are going to censor you if you say something they don't like. And they have
that's
that
in there
right.
too.
This is not a free speech issue. Free speech really only applies to the government. The government can't tell us we can't say something. But private businesses have the right, and this is why I didn't make a big deal about Sirius canceling my contract. That was not a free speech issue. I said something they didn't like me saying, and they canceled my contract. But the contract that I signed, I did read that one. That one said if I broadcast something they don't agree with, they have every right to delete it and then ultimately cancel my contract. And they did. But that's not free speech. And this is no different. And it's no different than a store saying you can't walk in our store without shoes on. They're
so
just saying
you couldn't use Google.
You're going to interact with our service. If you are going to use our software is basically what we're talking about here. These are the rules to use it. Here's another one. I am not allowed to play copyrighted music at the beginning of my show the way I could on Sirius. If I do, all of these platforms, all the podcasting platforms, run software. It takes their software about three notes to know that you put copyrighted music in there, and they will delete that episode. Those are just the rules we are supposed to live by.
Are you there?
Yeah. Can you
okay.
hear me?
Yeah. In my car should be no problem here.
Yeah.
What would you do if you couldn't use their services? Where would you go? Because if Google's like a monopoly, you have nowhere else to go. Where would you go?
But you have to stop saying Google. What
okay.
software does Google have a monopoly on? Probably their most used piece of software, I would think by far, would either be mail. Mail is probably number one. As a company,
right, yes.
we use Google Mail, even though we really kind of like Apple products better. But in some ways, Apple doesn't work the way Google can work. So we actually use Google Mail as a foundation for our company email. But they don't
Google
have a
search?
Monopoly. No, I don't use Google Search. I use DuckDuckGo. Tell
See,
me somewhere
about that.
Where,
I've never
where
done
Google,
that.
Tell me somewhere where Google has a monopoly. I don't know of any. Not maps.
I didn't know.
Google Maps are really
yeah.
popular, but I can also use Apple Maps or Bing Maps, or there's a dozen other map services. So I don't
right.
know of anywhere where Google has a monopoly.
Okay. So you think outside the box, and I haven't got that far yet. I was just hoping that you knew more about it than I did, and you could just basically
clearly, Google is big, And if there weren't a lot of advantages to using Google Mail as a company, we wouldn't. But we do, because if you wanted to work with many other programs, then Google is better than most that's out there. It's not a monopoly. It's just, and it's no different than Tesla cars. Everybody now sells electric cars. Everybody. And almost every auto manufacturer now has multiple electric models. They came out of nowhere. They're not selling. But Tesla still sells really, really well. They don't have a monopoly. They are just significantly better than everybody else at this point. And in some cases, that's what Google has done. Google has built some things that if you want lots of integrations to make everything work, then Google can save you an awful lot of time. But it's not a monopoly.
May 22nd, and this is supposed to take place whenever and whatever they're going to plan on doing. But I will ignore it. I appreciate what you told me. So
now here's the other thing you can do. You can go read it if you want and try to figure out if you agree with it or not. Like I said, I probably should read these things. I've just decided not to.
Right. Okay.
I'm not telling anybody not to read it. I'm just saying I choose not to. And here's the other thing. I can't count how many times I go to open a program and they'll flash a message saying we have a new terms of service. Check here to agree to it. And I'm not going to read it. Not only was it long the first time, well, they change it two or three times a year sometimes. And now I got to go back and read it again and try to – I'm just not going to bother.
Okay. Well, whatever's May 22nd, whatever they're going to do, and I don't know what that is, and we'll just wait till then, I suppose. Thank you.
Yeah, and again, I doubt that this is even any kind of a big deal. This stuff happens every day. It's just you happen to see this one or read it or be a part of it or something. But terms of service, you sign them constantly online, even if you don't realize it.
Right. Well, the free speech and all of these lawyers for every single thing that you want to do now is like the norm, and it's kind of it's a little concerning. It's like, am I going to accidentally step myself into guilty of something? I don't know.
It's possible, but here's the thing. Right now, I look around. I don't see anybody being prosecuted for breaking terms of service. I don't think it's that big of a deal. More than likely, here's an example. I know somebody that posted videos on YouTube for several years. They had hundreds of videos, and YouTube deleted them all.
That was that doctor.
Correct. Well, he wasn't a doctor.
Dr. McCullough.
It's happened to a lot of people.
Right.
We get videos deleted here and there. They had their entire account wiped out, hundreds of videos. But in the terms of service, they knew that that was possible had they read it.
Right. Yeah. I was just
do try not to do, I'm not going to read all of the terms of service. If I find a service that would help us, we need to use, we just sign up for it and use it. What we try not to do is become so dependent on any one of these services that if they go away, we're screwed. We try to, like our phone system. We have two phone systems. I don't know why both of them have as many issues as they have, but luckily, with all those problems, there had to be a day somewhere where we just were off the air completely because of technical issues, but not many. Most of the time, even though we have a problem, we usually figure out a backup and we end up on the air today. And we're working on our own for this reason. I can only find two good alternatives for a phone system that works within our system, and both of them are giving us headaches. So we're building our own. So we try not to be too dependent on any of these services. But sometimes, you know, there are software programs and online software that we use that we're very, very dependent on. And when they go down, it's a huge challenge for us.
Right. Well, I appreciate what you told me.
Part of our world and our business model today. So good talking to you. I wouldn't worry too much about those terms of service. Let's go to South Carolina. Terrence, good morning.
Morning, Kevin. How's it going?
Good. What's on your mind today?
So, you were talking about, like, the inflation and all that. And but I remember when, like, I started my first job on the books in 83. I was actually 82. Yeah, so I was 82. And I was making $3.25 an hour. But I went to work every day. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And what I'm seeing now, like, what I see now at my place, like, we get these guys coming. We have triaxles, quads, and then trailers. Most of the trailer drivers are older and, you know, are workers. The people in the quads are a little better, and then the triaxle guys are just like, you know, willy-nilly flyby guys come in and out.
Yeah, I was just going to say before I forget, mm-hmm. I remember my first job minimum wage for me was $2.65 an hour.
See, that must have been different. Yeah, I was in New York, so it was probably different in the Midwest.
Same first job. This number is going to be so low, I'm not sure I'm going to remember it. But I think it was like 30 or 40 cents an hour. Because she was a server, and servers got tips. So the minimum wage
yep.
for servers was significantly lower. I don't remember if that was the right number or not. Maybe it was $1.10. I don't know. But it was much, much lower. Now, let's think about this for a second. At $2.65 an hour, if I put in a 10-hour day, I'd make less than $30.
Right.
Yeah. Now, things were significantly cheaper. I will say that. So it's all relative. I mean, I probably you could live better on minimum wage back then than you could today.
Yeah. But like, the funny thing with here is, like, I noticed down in the South here, in South Carolina, like I was listening to these guys the other day. It was a little slow right around, like, right after January. And the one guy, they're talking off in the distance. I hear him, and he's like, this is BS. You know, I got this 4:30 start today, and they got to switch it up. And I'm like, okay. And then he goes, yeah. He goes, and then the other day they put me on the standby, but I didn't come in Monday because I had something to do. And I'm like, listen, I'm going, you don't want to work. You really don't want to work. You just want to work when you want to. You know what I mean? And that's like the mentality that I'm seeing of a lot of people. A lot of people have that mentality.
The attitude has definitely changed. There's no doubt about it. And part of it really is the environment itself. I mean, if we go back to when I talked about where you might drive around all day and fill out 10 applications, and it might take you 10 hours to do it all, and then you'd sit around and wait for phone calls back, and you may not get it. You may have to go out and do it again. When you did find a job, you wanted to keep it.
Yeah.
So we have a very, very different attitude about work. Work was not easy to find. And when you found it, my attitude was always, I better work hard to keep this. Today, it's so lackadaisical, the whole attitude about work. Well, if I show up, I show up. If not, I'll just go get a different job. Some of these people are working two and three jobs. And when they lose one, maybe they just fill in with Uber. And Uber, well, yeah, I could work today if I want, but I could also just wait till Friday night, because I always do better when the bars close. So it's a whole different environment. But then we also have to take into account that we have now had several decades of schools and participation trophies. I mean, we all know what I'm talking about. We reward people for next to nothing in our school system now. So we've created this entitlement mentality. And look, I'm not making this a generational thing. I know some Gen Z and Gen Xers that are damn hard workers. They're very good at what they do. But we have to understand they were brought up in a very different environment than we were. And some of this is our fault. We raised these kids.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm glad
we allowed our schools to raise them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it's funny though. At least my first started to come work here. I sat down with the guy, he's younger than me. You hired me, and he looked at me and he goes, "So is this just the stop off?" And I paused and I said, "I don't understand what you're asking." He goes, "Are you just coming here to work for a couple, a year or two, and then you're going to retire?" I said, "Obviously," "Don't take this the wrong way." I said, "Obviously, you didn't look at my application or my resume." And he goes, "Well, I glanced over it." I said, "You may have glanced over it, but you didn't look at it. Because if you would have only seen the 10 jobs that were on there," and I was honest, I started, the first job I had was in Staten Island at a flower shop, like a garden center flower shop, and that was on my resume. That's how I could put that many jobs in. And yeah. When I applied for this job, I was 59 now. I was 55 years old when I put it down. I mean, I'm baffled. And then I was like, all right, cool. And I just said, I accepted the cheap pay he gave me. I said, I'm going to let my work, my work ethic dictate what you're going to pay me.
There you go.
And he said, fine. And that was it. But like I said, they actually said in the meeting, like the beginning of the year, that if you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. We're not going to tolerate, and they said it, we're not going to tolerate people calling out and all this. But everything I did with Leanne, I let them know ahead of time. I stayed on page. I told them, this is what's going on. This is what I might need, and whatever I need, I got. But people don't communicate about that out there, and they wonder why. And, again, you know the deal. When you hiring people is expensive. It's expensive.
Oh, yeah, it is. And training them, hiring and training is not only expensive, it's disruptive.
Yep.
Because once
Absolutely.
We have a full staff, then everybody has a job and everybody has to work in order for the company to function. And then when somebody has to stop and write ads and place ads and follow up on ads and take calls and read resumes and do interviews, then bring somebody in and try to train them. That is a very disruptive process. You know, in big enough
absolutely.
Companies, you have departments that's their job. But in a small company, you don't have somebody who heads HR and does all of your hiring. And if you do, it's probably their third job in the company. They probably have two other big jobs or functions that they perform in the company. So when hiring becomes this difficult, it is, I would say it is our biggest challenge right now, is keeping good employees. And we don't have a problem keeping good employees. But if you just lose one a year when you're at the size we're at, that's disruptive, especially when you can't find people to replace them. And, you know, we have an advantage in some of our positions. We can hire anywhere in the country because they're remote. The hardest job we have is here for the warehouse because we're in a small town.
Yeah, I don't know. I told, like I said, to Morgan on the phone when I first got on, I was like, I don't know if I'm getting old and crotchety or something, but like I think about, like, I said, I'm talking about these younger kids, like, you know, they don't want to do nothing, but, I mean, they don't want to work, or, like you said, expect a trophy. Just because you show up, you think, oh, you can only show up 4 days when the job requires five. I don't know. Like I said, it's just my mentality. Like, I think I'm getting old and crotchety, but I know that's not the case. It's just concerning to hear, though, Kevin. You know, like I said, I've worked my whole life, man. I come to work, I put my 110% into it, man. I try to do what's right by the company and all that. And even when I had my own stuff, this is my work ethic. And just to see it disintegrate, it's kind of like, it rubs you the wrong way. It makes you feel weird,
There's no doubt. I mean, I don't like the economy we're in right now. I don't like the political cycle we're in right now. I don't like the world situation we're in right now. And like I say, the last time I remember this kind of pessimism or this many things happening, negative things happening all at once, probably was the 70s as we were coming out of Vietnam.
Right, yeah. All right, I'll let someone else get in there, Kev. Take care.
Well, I guess there is another way we could look at this. We could look at it as, you know, when we were coming out of Vietnam, I was just getting out of high school. You weren't far behind.
No.
We've had a really good long economic run-up since then, really. I mean, it's been, our country was in pretty good shape in a lot of ways for a long time. So I guess we could at least be fortunate that the majority of my lifetime, it was not a struggle to live in this country. It was actually pretty easy.
Right, yeah. No.
And I have
hopefully
to believe
it gets better.
At some point we'll get back to a cycle like that again.
Yep. One can only hope.
That's what I'm hoping
all
for.
All right, Kev.
All right, good talking to you. All right, I am going to my last call, and I am just fine ending early today. I have a lot going on, but if you want to call, I'll take your calls. So hit that, as long as you've restarted your app since the show began, your app should work. The call now button will get you in here, or the number to dial, 319-527-6791. I will do something else as well. If you are watching on any of the live streams, Facebook, YouTube, I don't think I can see comments from X, Instagram, Twitch. If you want to type a question into the chat, I may take a couple questions from the chat. Yeah, here's one. It's not really a question. It's a comment. And I've been getting this a lot. I'm a little shocked by this since we've been doing the live stream. It says, hey, Kevin Rutherford, come back to Sirius XM. Not no, but hell no. I didn't choose to leave Sirius XM. My contract was canceled, but I'm glad they canceled it. I had considered leaving. It was just too good of a deal to give up, I thought. But I am enjoying this so much more. No commercials, no hard end time. If it's time to end, but I'm in the middle of a call, I just keep going. If we don't have a lot of calls, then I can quit early. And there's no commercials. And you can listen to every one of our shows on our app. So, Walter, if you don't have our app, go to your store, Google Play or your iOS, your Apple store. Look for Let's Truck. And then when you find Let's Truck, you will find the Audio Road app. And it's way better than listening on Sirius. Why would we go back to Sirius now? All right. Let me get to that call. Let's go to Iowa. Tom, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Kevin. So Sirius XM is your ex-girlfriend. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Why would I go back?
Every single ex-girlfriend that I've ever had that broke up with me always wanted me back, every one of them. And it's just so satisfying saying it's okay. I understand, you made a big mistake, you know, but it just makes you smile.
I don't think Sirius XM wants me back. They haven't sent me any emails. Nobody's hinted that they want me back. I'm pretty sure that relationship's over.
Yeah. That guy got reelected last term. For instance, I was just in Walmart getting water and things for the week, and a guy had a baby in the cart, but I couldn't see if it was a boy. It was backwards to me, and I go, hey, well, so you got a baby there. I go, how old? He goes, two or three months. I forget what he said exactly. And I go, hey, let me ask you a personal question there. I said, because I heard on a podcast I was listening to the other day that a guy had a baby, and they immediately, maybe gave it like 2 hours to make sure it was breathing right, ran up and gave it a vaccination.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have any idea this was going on. That's why I asked him, and he said, no. He said, no, it wasn't immediately. It was like 12 hours later. I go, that's okay then, you know. And I could tell by the look on his face. I didn't even have to ask him. I could tell by the look on his face that he let it happen, you know.
Other crazy statistics about this, and I don't even go look. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I have seen numbers. Like, you know, in the 70s, we used to get like 5 vaccinations or 6, and now the list is like 70 or something. Now, I don't know how much truth is to that. I don't know how many are mandatory. I don't know how many the average kid is getting. But there are a lot of vaccines, and not just for kids. There are, and almost all of these vaccine commercials, there's one interesting line that I've noticed in there. So I was just watching the vaccine commercial for shingles last night. Almost every vaccine commercial, if you listen close enough, between the music playing and all the beautiful scenery on the TV, if you're listening
on the beach, right.
So that guy that's talking real quiet, real fast in the background, always, if it's a vaccination, the sentence is the vaccine does not work for everybody.
I didn't hear that one.
What percentage of the people doesn't it work for? But wait a minute. You just throw out that doesn't work for everybody. Well, why not?
Yeah, well, my favorite line of any of the drug commercials, and every single one I've seen has this line in it, like Mounjaro, you know, and it tells you the side effects and blah, 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 as the guy spit it out, is that do not take Mounjaro if you're allergic to it.
How do you know? Right. That one always gets me, too.
Because every time I pick the Mounjaro fruit off the tree, I break out knives.
Well,
you know what I mean?
If I ever had an injection of Mounjaro and I had an allergic reaction to it, I think I'm smart enough not to do it again.
No.
Do you really have to tell me that in the commercial?
No, not really, but you're not really that bright if you took Mounjaro in the first place. So, you know what I mean?
You know, the other one I just love about these weight loss drugs now, the GLP-1s, they all say... You could lose 20% of your body weight with diet and exercise. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah, no shit, right?
I'll do one better. If you want to lose 20, 30, 40% of your body weight, you don't need the exercise or the Mounjaro. We can do it with diet alone.
Just do it. The good, clean keto, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, it works.
Hey. Now, do you listen to a podcast when you're out in the garden or anything?
I don't.
Or are you podcast free? You just read I think on the bottom, this guy gets the transcripts on there where you can just print them out or whatever, because that's the route that you like to go. I was just floored. Now, this is where I heard about the baby vaccinations. It's a Dark Horse podcast with, you know, Brett Weinstein. You've heard of him.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so that's his podcast. So he had one, and I wrote it down the other day, with Ryan Cole, and that was really a interesting one about the vaccination, and they're vaccinologists or whatever you call them. They're doctors, but they're really big on this, and some of the stuff he was saying, and it's just true. You just know it's true about how we don't really, you know, we of course don't know what's going to happen with it, but I think people are in for a little bit of in the turbo cancers and all that stuff. People are in for a little bit of a shock, but The other one he had was, and this guy's got a book, The Moth in the Iron Lung, and it's about polio. And it's about
I think I have that book on my Kindle. I think Matt may have recommended that book to me a long time ago, and I think it got lost in my Kindle somewhere.
Okay, because it's only a 5-hour read on the Audible. So I got JFK Jr.'s new book, and you still haven't read his old one, which is, I know you know everything, but about what he's going to say. But,
actually,
know,
I don't. I'll bet I would really enjoy his book. I always read. I mean, there's almost never a time where I don't read. I do read
the audiobook
in the summer, but I don't listen to podcasts. It's like I can't. The only activity I can listen to things while I do it is driving. I can't listen
to
things.
Not even gardening.
Can't listen to things if I walk. I can't listen to things while I'm gardening. I tune them out. I'll start listening, but then the next thing I know, my mind's wandering and doing. But for some reason, when I drive, I can really focus on audio content, but not doing anything else.
Yeah, on the JFK books, do not get the audio. He must have, this guy must be his lifelong friend that decided he wanted to narrate an audio book. And I don't leave reviews normally. But this one, I got a little harsh. I said, he's probably a nice guy, but the dude shouldn't even read to his children because they're going to hate him. You know what I mean? So.
And I will say that a good narrator can make a bad book enjoyable. I've actually had books where the book wasn't that great, really, but I have a couple narrators that I really like. Or a bad narrator can totally screw up a good book.
And it makes it hard to listen to, and then you're not engaged, so it makes it more difficult, you know what I mean? So you can't have any distractions at all. I've looked up, and I'm not a big fiction guy, but Jack Carr has that series. They made one into a movie. And the narrator was so good that I listened to that whole series, and then I looked to see what else he narrated, and he did like a short story, and I listened to that. It was totally gay, but I'm like, oh, whatever, you know what I mean? But the guy was so good, because you can search on Audible by narrator too, you know, and you're absolutely 100% right.
There are times when I'm just looking, you know, I don't have anything in mind. I don't have a certain author that I want. I just want something new. And if I'm getting an audio book, I will search by my favorite narrators first.
Do that. But definitely read that, because I'd love to hear your comments about that, because we were lied to again about the polio. It was environmental. I mean, he basically tells you the whole proof back in the late 1800s, because some guy brought some moths over to New York, and they were killing it with arsenic. It was arsenic poisoning. It wasn't polio.
Well, if we look at, you know, they always want to use those success stories around vaccines to tell us how important vaccines are. But if we look... We really didn't need these things until we started living in cities. Started living in cities, we screwed things up bad. I mean, I have a hard time believing this, but I've read it enough times to know that it was true. People used to have in multi-story apartment buildings in cities, they didn't have indoor plumbing. People had chamber pots, and they used to just dump them out the window.
Yeah, that's probably not real good for you. That's, I don't know if vaccine's going to help you with that deal.
Well, if you think about it, it was a lot of those kinds of diseases, communicable diseases, something you could catch from somebody else, and that's what we had problems with when we first started moving into cities. But those types of diseases were not common at all before cities. So did we really need those vaccines, and how much did they really help us? But we created the problem that created the need for the vaccine in the first place.
Yeah, you know, like you said, when you were in fifth or sixth grade, you know, they give you that round shot that a lot of guys our age have on their shoulder. You know, they give you six at a time, wham.
Right.
And so you have that scar on your shoulder. Do you have one of those?
I don't have one of those, but I don't know why not.
Well, I know why I don't, and I don't know if I was just being an asshole kid or whatever, and the poor son of a bitch that, Zimmerman was his name. He always stood next to me in line, and he took the shot, and then I scooted right around him, and he got hit. He got it twice, I think, if I remember. But I scooted around him, and I didn't get it. You know what I mean? So I wonder, when all this vaccine shit came up, I'm like, oh, I wonder if I killed that poor guy. You know what I mean?
He got
like double doors. He's all autistic now and scribbling on himself and shit.
No, I don't know why I don't have one of those. That used to be really common.
Right. You must have skipped out of that thing too, because I think they all left a mark.
I was known for not going to school all that often.
Yeah, that's
I got by with the minimum.
I just happened to be there on that day, but I think that was like fourth or fifth grade, if I remember. They were hitting us pretty young then too, but if you look at those vaccines now and the autism and stuff, there's just no way that it's not the cause. Just no way.
There's something horrible going wrong with our entire medical system, and we talk about it all the time, but it just continues to get worse. And all the vaccines are one of them. I mean, the whole idea of a vaccine for HPV is just insane to me. The numbers are so incredibly low, and yet they still say in that commercial, this vaccine won't work for everybody, but they never explain that.
That's the one that they're giving to the babies. That's
correct.
What he said, it was the HPV.
And here's the thing,
because
even if you believed in the HPV vaccine, which I don't, it does not need to be given until much, much later in life. People don't get the problems from them until their teen years or later.
Yeah, well, you'd hope. I mean, but, you know, exactly. I mean, depending on what country you're in, I guess, you know. It's just, you know what I'd like to see happen is I just can't vote for, there's no way I'm voting for a Democrat ever in my life, but Biden for sure, you know, he can't go in there. But I'd like to see Trump get in. I like his policies. Yeah, I didn't like anything he said. But I'd like to see him appoint JFK Jr. as the guy who Fauci was, you know?
Yeah.
And flush that toilet over there with him, because I think he would go – I think he would go because, I mean, they're not giving him any protection now, and I think, you know, I think it would help with any other voters.
I'd like to see him in the cabinet somewhere. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to cut you loose. I just looked. We just got a ton of phone calls for some reason. So let's go to Pennsylvania. Dan, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning, Kevin. Oh.
What's on your mind today?
Tires and rolling resistance.
Okay.
I feel like you don't talk about that like you used to. I'm still somewhat of a nerd about that. I feel like I can't get information like I even used to be able to. The Michelin calculator's out there, and it's helpful, and I use it a lot. There used to be a website, America Moves by Truck, that had a chart, and that's gone. What else can I use? Is there anything available?
No, not really. The America Moves by Truck was simply they redistributed Michelin's numbers. That was the exact
had a few tires on it that, at the time, Michelin didn't have, so it was nice to have both of them.
I don't know how it could have. I know the guy that owned that site. And he was pulling – all he did, he pulled the data straight from Michelin. That's all that was. It was
well,
just
maybe if his tires got older, Michelin didn't have them on their site anymore because there were a few tires on his site that were not on Michelin.
Maybe
but,
there was. I don't
okay,
know how.
Even if I'm wrong, what else is available? Is there anything?
Yokohama has a site, but it was very, very limited as far as how many tires were on it. Now, that was a couple of years ago, but really, Michelin's calculator is better than it used to be. It's just different. What you can't do anymore, you can't just randomly scroll through the list the way you used to and look for low tires. Now what you do is you should really only use the Michelin calculator when you are ready to buy tires. And then what you do is you go in and you put in your tires that you currently have, and then you put in any tire that you're considering, and then it tells you if that new tire is better or worse.
Right.
I actually helped them design that site. And I like that site because that to me was so much faster and more accurate than just randomly scrolling through a list of tires.
Okay. So I was hoping you'd have some somewhere else because it seems like there should be more information, not less. But okay. So that's all I have for you today.
All right. Well, I do believe there is more information in the new calculator. It gives us fuel savings, all kinds of things. And it works. I don't know why we need something else. That site works really well. Put in your tires, choose a new tire you're interested in, and see what the results are with fuel savings. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. The gentleman that was calling about Social Security earlier, if he's listening, I've got a couple of really good resources.
Okay.
I studied it very, very hard, and I've got a lot of calculators myself. I work with a lot of people to help them make that decision because that's what I've learned from this guy. So the book is called Get What's Yours by Larry Kotlikoff, Kotlikoff. He's head of a department at Boston University, but he's the Social Security guru of the country. He has all the calculators and everything. That's his book. And then once a year I spend $39 for his Maximize My Social Security software, and I can do that for any number of people. I do that for any number of that I can plug their information in. It takes in the information from it actually sucks in the information from Social Security on you, on each person, and then it will tell you exactly what you would get at age 62 and along the way on up. You know, full retirement age now is going to be 67 for that gentleman. It was 66. I was the last year of 66 when it could have gotten it. But I found that once I got with that website, I was going to take it at 66 because I could make all I wanted to after that. You know, you're limited.
Right.
My wife took it at 62 last year, and I pay her $1,860 a month because that's the maximum she can make per month and draw Social Security. The rules are the rules, and he has all the rules built in, which I've learned all the rules over the years too. But he has them all built in to his the book is just fantastic. Here's the one difference.
I need to get updated on. Yeah, you know, I knew this really, really well when I had to sit for my CFP. This was a big part of what we had to know. And it's like most government programs. It's overly complicated.
You have to learn all the rules. Right, correct.
You forget it. So I just got this book because I need to update my info on this.
Yeah. Well, just to give you an example, okay, if I would have taken it at 66, which was my full retirement age, I would have had $2,540 a month, and then plus inflation going forward, which we've had some inflation, obviously. But by delaying from 66 to 70, I got 8% per year for each year extra, plus the inflation rate. So next December, no, next November, I will take my 70-year-old number, and I'll be getting $4,200 a month. I mean, I'll be getting $50,000 a year from Social Security, plus inflation for the rest of my life.
Right.
I plan on living a long time, but to give you the actual number, the difference between 66 and 70 is right at age 80 is where I will top what I'm doing, and then of course is going way up after that. You know, obviously because you know the younger amount, you know, but that's the difference that the extra 32%, 8% a year gives you.
So,
along the way is that difference is about 9 to 10 years. Now the thing that he has to understand is if he does it at 62, he's going to be very limited on what he can earn outside of it. 1860 is what my wife can earn this year per month. And after that, for every $3 she earns after that 1860 a month, $1 of her Social Security is reduced.
That makes me insane, by the way.
Well, I know, but it's the rules. I mean, life I have is the rules are the rules. And what I have to do is figure out within the rules what we can do to maximize everything in our business and our personal finances. And so, yeah, it is. It drives you crazy, but it's the rules. So we have to go by those. Now, it isn't taken away forever, though. Most people think it's taken away forever. Let's say you get a good-paying job and you want to keep doing your Social Security. You can always pause your Social Security. You can pause it. And then credits are going to go up, actually, and get higher later if you wanted to do that. However, but there's one thing. If they take money from you after you get your full retirement age, they put that money back in the extra in your check. And you'll get it in 2 or 3 years afterwards. So you do get the money back.
But here's the problem I have with it. One, it's way too complicated. Pausing, restarting, what's the calculation if I do? And we haven't even talked about taxes yet. Taxes affect this too, based on earnings and all kinds of other screwy stuff. Here's my problem. This is my money. It should not be. This is not a gift from the government. This is not some sort of benefit program. This is my money. And honestly, the government screws me right off the bat because they did a horrible job of investing it into their Ponzi scheme. So I'm not getting back as much as I realistically should had it been invested properly.
Yeah.
And now you make it this complicated for me to get it back?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to those terms of service. That's what they give us.
Yeah,
is basically the terms of service.
And they're horrible.
Those two sites, though, Get What's Yours is the book, and it's a great book, and Maximize My Social Security. Like I say, it's outstanding. Everybody should do it. Everybody should start planning earlier. I actually help a lot of people in their 50s because I have calculators that will can estimate everything going forward and at 62 each year on up, you know, to 70. At 70, you have to take it. If you don't take it at 70, you know, if you miss a month, you're not gonna get it back. So you might, I will apply in November. I'll get that, and it'll be a bonus. You know,
there are so many reasons I hate this program. No matter how long you worked and paid into Social Security, if you die a day into retirement, you get screwed completely. Now,
if you have
a spouse, you might get some of it passed on, but even that sometimes.
Wait a minute. Yeah, that's a big one, Kevin. He does need to hear this. The main reason I waited till 70 is my wife is six and a half years younger than me. Okay, so and she worked with the school system, so she never made an awful lot of money. So her Social Security check will be low. But let's say I lived to 80 and she's 73 and a half. And I assume room temperature all of a sudden, I die. Okay, she will move up to my number at that point, which will give several thousand dollars more than a month than she's getting. So she will actually move up to that number, and her family, the women, live to be 95 to 100. So she'll actually get the money. Now, there again, I'm keto, you know, mostly keto, some carnivore. I plan on living to 100. I'm 69 and a half right now, and I have no medications. I am very vibrant. You know, I'm still doing 2,700 miles a week plus everything else I do. So, you know, mentor people. I work with people. You know, I've got trucks, you know, everything. So, you know, if you stay active, I think you can and eat right like we're doing. I think we can live a long time. So I think we're going to get the best of Social Security because we're going to outlive their actuarial numbers.
That's what I'm hoping for. It's just a shame that they've so overcomplicated all of this. And honestly, why don't I have an option at the whatever age I decide to retire? Why isn't there just a lump sum that I can take? There should be.
Yeah.
Paid
well,
into it
they
all.
Tried that. They tried that in the early 2000s, and you know the politics of it is it gets demagogued, and they tried it. You know, they did try Bush the first 2 years.
Yeah,
was going to try it, and it, politically it was the third rail. So that's the thing. Once it's in there, it's in there.
Yeah.
It will, for people that worked all their lives and made decent money, especially early on, because it's indexed, you know, my money back when I was in my 20s is indexed up to my 60th birthday. So,
right.
You know, the earlier you work, the more you make early, the better your checks are. Mine's up near the max, and I never made the max, but I made it for a long time.
That rule actually makes sense because that's how investment works. The longer the investment's in there, the more valuable it should be. So that at least makes sense. Here's the thing. You know, with a call like that today, other than just doing what I did, trying to describe to him why we would have to calculate this, and I think I got it across, other than that, this is going to have to be a coaching call thing. I can't help somebody with this on the radio show. There's too many ways to screw this up. If you don't ask it's really easy to screw this up.
Well, get book or that website, it will help people a lot. And like I say, I work with other people too. So if anybody knows me, they can get in touch with me too. I'll work with them too with my calculators because I've set up a bunch of spreadsheets and calculators on the average wage index. There's a lot of different things involved.
I know.
But that's where I learned it from was from Dr. Kotlikoff. So he was a very good teacher about it. So,
well,
all right, sir.
Gonna,
have a good day.
I'm going to read the book and I will probably go set up those calculators. So if somebody wants help with this, I could do it on coaching calls. It's just not, other than some basic information, not a whole lot I can help people with here on the air. Let's go to South Carolina. Nick, welcome.
Hey, Kevin, what's going on, buddy?
What can I help you with today?
Hey, you had a caller earlier about the guy having the coolant issue.
Yeah.
He was losing leaking coolant. I had the same issue. I bought a truck and I had the same issue. I was chasing it for like 3 years. And then I was listening to your show and I forget if it was you or Pittsburgh Power that said that sometimes they level out after a certain amount.
A
so I tried that. What's that?
You mean a new truck that leaks right from the beginning? Or any truck.
This wasn't a new truck. Or any truck. He said that any truck, sometimes they can do that. So I just let mine go down until it stopped going down, and it stays right between my ad and my full mark, and it hasn't budged for like over a year. I haven't lost any coolant at all.
I would say that's fairly rare. I didn't say that. That must have been somebody at Pittsburgh Power. And I'm not saying it's not true, but it's pretty rare. Leaks don't fix themselves. One of the things we do see happen is if somebody has worked on the cooling system many times, your coolant goes to a lot of different places in that truck. I realized this when we were doing the Evans coolant because we had to get all of the old coolant out of the system. And some trucks, it was really difficult. Like you had to chase stuff out of the sleeper because of the heater core back there. It was a lot of work. Sometimes when somebody has worked on the cooling system, the opposite happens. they don't get it completely filled. So then it looks like it's full until the system starts to circulate. Then it looks low, so you add some. Then it might circulate again, and it looks low, and you add some, and then it stops. But that's pretty rare, and leaks normally don't fix themselves. Now, this being a new truck, maybe they just didn't get the cooling system filled completely, and at some point this would stop, but that's pretty darn rare.
Okay. Well, it worked on mine, so...
Yeah, like I say, it can happen, but I don't troubleshoot based on something that is so rare. In order for that to happen, we have to think about it. If we had a leak, how can a leak fix itself?
True.
It almost
Good point.
It's almost impossible. I mean, there might be some weird situation out there where something leaks and then I can't even think of one, though. I mean, if something is leaking, something is either cracked, loose, a seal went bad. I mean, something happened to cause this leak start. And 99% of the reasons leaks happen, they're not going to fix themselves.
Okay.
But it's not completely out of the question. But it's one of those things that it's so rare, it doesn't really fall into my troubleshooting tree. But it does occasionally happen. Almost every time I've seen it happen, it's because somebody was working on the system, and the system just needed to kind of refill itself. Let's go to Tennessee. James, welcome.
Hey, Kevin. Chamber pot was not on my drinking bingo card today, so I'm good.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah. And I was just going to let you know.
That is the right term, right? Even when I said it, I'm like, is that the right word I'm looking for? I think it is.
I'm going to assume so. It made sense to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know that was really what we were going for there. But anyway, as a side note about your ex-girlfriend, I don't think Dan Ronan's show is on anymore. I tried to get it this past weekend.
Really?
So, he's not on the website either, so I don't know what happened, but anyway. So my question is about the CMC Live.
Doing quite a bit over there these
questions,
days.
Questions on our homework.
Sure.
Is that question, am I answering that? I mean, I know I'm answering it for myself. But am I going to go back and review that, like, towards the end of the course, or will you, or I'm just trying to think of how much detail to go into them, because they are open-ended questions.
Yeah, they are very open-ended, and they are designed that way to get you thinking, and the more you think and the more detail you put in, the better off you will be. So this is for you. Now, anytime you want to go over it with me, we can, but there won't be a formal time in the program where I go back to that kind of stuff.
Okay. No worries. That answers that question for me, that mindset of what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, now what could happen during the course, at some point I may be teaching something and I might say, hey, remember in that form when we asked you this question, this is what we were shooting for. That may happen, but there isn't any place where we're going to formally come back and work on these forms.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you. And as for the job things, I think that just all goes back to the personal responsibility discussion that I think we've all had for the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, it's just been a trend, and I think it comes from a combination of things, of parents thinking that schools are there to educate their children about everything, and schools not really educating kids about much of anything anymore, just kind of teaching to a test. You know, here we're going to teach you this, you need to memorize it, and then you can pass the test. Once the test is over, We retain that information because of the way it was taught. And then we just reward everybody for everything because we don't want them to feel bad. But it's both the parents and the school problem, because the kinds of things we're talking about, work ethic, those kind of things, those should be taught at home. Now, the schools aren't making it any better. They're making it worse by not adhering to any kind of a work ethic at all. But parents have kind of given up teaching their kids stuff.
I can't speak to that. I've never had children. And I've never been around them because I've never had them, but I see, you know, some of the older people are the same way. So
there's no doubt. That's why I try not to make this completely generational, because every generation tends to do this. Oh, this new generation is just bad at everything. Well, they're different, not necessarily bad. And most of the time we can look at the situation and see why they're different. But then the other thing I try to remind them is we raised that generation. We have some responsibility there. Here's what I will tell you about children. I've been around a lot of children a lot my whole life. They are very, very impressionable, and they learn easy. So that's why each generation is different. It's not that they're different as human beings. They grew up in a very different time. How could a child right now not be wildly different than myself at 60? We had TVs when I was growing up, but we had three channels. There's no such thing as a cell phone or a computer or 10,000 other things that are a very big part of a child's life now. And I don't think it's gotten better. I think this idea that children are staring at screens all day long is absolutely horrible in so many ways, but we're not going to change it. I mean, you can change it within your own family somewhat, but even that can be a struggle. I mean, trying to feed children properly today is more and more of a struggle all the time because they have access to food everywhere.
Very true. And to be an optometrist in 30 years.
Yeah, the thing I try to remind people of is whatever behaviors you're seeing out of the generations that follow yours, it's not that they're inherently bad human beings. These aren't character flaws. They think this way because this is how they were brought up. This is just their reality, and this is what they live with.
Not having firsthand knowledge, I can see that happening.
Yeah, and then the other thing, I mean, we got to the point where material things were very important to us. You know, I see this thing all the time. Well, two parents have to work today just to get by. Well, that may be true, but we also have to look at why that is. That isn't just because jobs pay less. That's what everybody wants to make it out to be. When I was growing up, the average home was 1,200 square feet. 1,200 square feet is now considered a tiny home. The average now is well over 2,000, I believe. That costs a lot more to build bigger houses. When I grew up, you probably had one TV, not six. Now, not only are there TVs everywhere, every child and everybody in the family has two or three devices. When I grew up, TV was free. It's not free anymore. Now people pay for multiple streaming services. We have all kinds of subscription services. We have internet service, and everybody in the family has a device and an internet plan. It used to be more common for a family to have one car. If you had a second car, that was kind of a big deal. That now everybody in the family has a car. I could go on and on and on about all the things we spend money on today that we did not spend money on when I was growing up. So my mom didn't work outside of the house. she had time to teach me things as I was growing up. Now we have parents that commute 45 minutes to an hour on average and then work 10 hours a day. So they're gone 12 to 14 hours a day. And we've turned over raising our kids to the schools, and it was a big mistake.
I agree. And I think Zenith TVs was on my bingo card, so I'm going to get a drink
right now. There you go. Yeah.
Thanks, man. Have a good week.
When you got a new high-end TV back then, so a high-end TV back then was a giant piece of furniture, like a credenza, and it had a TV in it, and you opened up the doors and you could see the TV, and then over on the side it had a phonograph, a record player. Does anybody even know what those things are anymore? And that piece of furniture probably weighed 400 pounds. You had to get several people to help you, but you only bought one of those things in your lifetime, usually. Now,
in a knob that clicked so loud that you couldn't take a nap and change the channel while your father was taking a nap at the same time.
Yeah, and what the very first remote controls, it's interesting that you said the knob just changing the channel made that much noise. The original remote controls, it was actually noise. It was like a clicker. The click, the noise was what made the channel change.
That's
going back a way. And I remember that because for some reason, if I built a Hot Wheel track down our stairs, the noise it made, the car would make when it would hit the bottom, would change the channel on the TV. So I wasn't allowed to play with my Hot Wheel cars while my dad was watching TV because the channel would keep changing.
The clapper. Man,
exactly. That was kind of the technology was the clapper. All right, James, good reminiscing. I'm going to cut you loose, get to another call. Let's go to California. Juan, welcome.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Feeling old today.
It's late in the day too, so I'll keep it short for you. I picked up the Garmin diesel and I'm completely lost with it. I upgraded from the regular Instinct, so I got a couple of questions. The first one being the HRV app, the app itself. Is that something that's a third-party app that you get from the IQ Garmin app?
Say that again. Which app are you looking for?
So,
'cause there are
multiple. So if I want to add. Oh, yeah, no, that's part of the confusion. If I want to add HRV to my diesel, how do I do it?
So that is built into the operating system. That is not a third-party app or an app you add. Have the diesel or the diesel 2?
It's, I guess technically it's the Garmin Instinct 2 diesel edition.
Okay, diesel. Then it has HRV built in. It is... I believe they still call it a widget. I don't have my watch on.
Yes.
My battery, I missed it. Yeah, so you add some of those features by adding a widget to your home screen. And then,
so I'm familiar with that because Instinct, you could do the same thing. I just didn't see
correct.
It.
Yeah, you find the correct app or widget or whatever. They've changed it a couple times. But then you can just hit the one button and scroll through your widgets.
Yep, and then just go ahead and basically add it to your watch and to your home
correct.
Screen.
Yep,
I'm clear there. Okay, so the Trucker's Workout, according to the setup, there is also a Garmin diesel app. Okay,
that
I downloaded?
That's the app you need for the workouts, right?
Okay, so everything's going to be on there?
Yes.
Or do I have to look for it? Because when I open...
Well, you got to look for everything because this darn watch has so many features.
It really does. Okay, I got that
I know.
Part. Garmin Pay, is that something you set up?
It is. I have not set that up because I do use Apple Pay just for my phone. So I can't really help you. But it is the same type of system as Apple Pay. So you log in. You enter your credit card details, and then you can use the watch to then pay.
All right, perfect. No, I have Apple Pay, so I'll just keep it simple and just keep doing it that way.
That's what I did, yeah.
Okay. No, I think I got it. I appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. All right. We are going to wrap this up today. We're just past the two-hour mark. I am out of calls. Good stuff today. I'm glad we recovered. So I'll just let everybody know. We've developed kind of a pattern here. We have two phone systems. They do quite often not want to cooperate with us. We don't really have a primary and a backup. We've switched so many times, I don't remember what was supposed to be the primary, what was supposed to be the backup. So our method, we've just kind of fallen into this, is we were using, I'll just say, program A for the last couple of weeks, and everything was fine until this morning. Now we've switched to program B. We will stick with program B until it breaks. It just seems to be easier. So we will be back on this phone system tomorrow for the Power Hour. We are here all week, so we will see you soon. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.